I remember clearly the first time I met Father Ridden at that conference. There were a group of us together, and he said, "Does anybody have an extra toothbrush and toothpaste? I forgot to bring mine." And I said, "I do." I don't know why I brought two. Well, I do. The Holy Spirit knew he wasn't going to bring his. So that's how we got bonded. Thanks so much for having me. Father Richard did ask me last night to start out talking to you a little bit about prison ministry. And I can say this right off the bat. I was never assigned to prison ministry. I was in a parish where there was a federal prison within the boundaries of the parish, and we would fill in temporarily when the chaplain was away, that kind of thing. And I enjoyed going up there, but I never felt called to it. And then a new chaplain came in, a Catholic nun, Sister Anne Marie. I hadn't met her yet, and I was celebrating our vigil mass in the parish. As I was sitting there after close of the mass, I felt like the Lord say, "Pray for the new chaplain. Pray for your relationship with the new chaplain at the federal prison." So I did for a minute, and then I concluded mass, went into the sacristy, and this lady walks up to me, and she says, "I'm Sister Anne Marie. I'm the new chaplain at the Federal Correctional Institution." So we chatted for a few minutes, and then she said, "I see from the bulletin you have healing masses here in the church. Have you ever had a healing mass at the prison?" And I said, "No, sister, I haven't had the opportunity." She says, "How about doing it?" So she was charismatic and very open to healing ministry. And so that was the beginning of a new vision of why I was there and what I could do. So within a short time, she arranged for a healing mass. It was an amazing experience. At that point, the prison was all women. It had been men prior, and they moved the men out, brought women in. And we had probably about 75 women in the chapel for the first healing mass. Something extraordinary happened because we brought in some people from the renewal, just like yourselves, who are involved in healing ministry, to be teams, along with Sister and myself, praying for the inmates. But it just kept going on and on, we just couldn't understand it. Well, what had happened was people were getting so touched in the chapel. There was a huge compound or quadrangle, and people were, other inmates were out there just enjoying the sun and so forth, walking around and chatting. And so the inmates who had been at Mass rushed out, said, "Go into the chapel. The Lord is moving. He's pouring healing out. Don't miss it." So that was the beginning, you know, the launching of this healing ministry there. Then the Lord made it even better because a week later, Sister arranged for a testimony meeting for anyone who had received a healing at that Mass. And women were talking about physical healings and emotional healings. One of the women had a deep emotional healing. She was our organist. She was big and mean. The Lord delivered her of anger. And a few years later, I was in Pittsburgh for a charismatic conference there. And I heard someone call my name. And I turned around, and this large lady lunges at me and hugs me. It was Connie, who had been our organist at the prison. She now had come to the charismatic conference. She got involved in a prayer Bible study up in Detroit, and she came into the renewal and came to the conference. So it's amazing how the Lord arranges things. But a year later, something extraordinary happened. Because we had, on the anniversary of the first healing mass, we had another one, and a woman came up to me and she said, "I'd like to give testimony about what's been going on since the last healing mass." I said, "Yes." Her name was Maria Bonita. She was a Native American from Texas. And her testimony was this. She said, "I came to the first healing mass and I was healed of tuberculosis." And she said, "But I knew that I was healed of tuberculosis because I was HIV positive." So she said, "I decided to just pray myself this way." She said, "Lord, if you care enough about me to heal the TB, then I'm asking you now to heal the HIV. And she prayed for 3 months, and then she just had herself tested. It was still the same. So then she prayed another 6 months, and she had herself tested. And they were so shocked, they retested her because it was gone. So the Lord healed her of HIV. And every time I'd run into her, I'd say, "How's it going, Maria?" "Negative, Padre, negative." more than that happened. Later, one of the chaplains at the federal prison had to resign because of her age, and they had just opened a new state prison in Newtown. You've heard of Newtown because of the tragedy there. And she asked me if I'd come over. By that time, they had a full-time priest at the federal prison, and so I wasn't needed there anymore. So she said, could you come over here, say Mass, and maybe come for more ministry? And so we set it up for me to come there. And that opened a new door, too, because I had a chance to offer a Life in the Spirit seminar there. And we got about 20 men to take it, but about at least 8 of them dropped out early. And we did have a physical healing at the Life in the Spirit Mass on that Sunday. A man from Cambodia who had fallen off the roof of a house in Cambodia and injured his back had a complete healing of his back at that healing Mass. Or it wasn't even a healing Mass. It was Baptism of the Spirit Mass, but he received a healing there. So when I prayed about what had happened, why we lost the men, the message I got was, too many of these inmates are wounded. They need a healing retreat before they can be baptized in the Spirit. And so I ended up writing an inner healing retreat for inmates. And I've since been able to put it on DVD. Prison Fellowship picked it up and placed it in over 100 prisons in this country. And it's also been used in foreign countries as well. But part of what happened when I told the chaplain there, Gail Paul, she was a Methodist charismatic lady, what I wanted to do, she says, unless you deal with abuse, don't bother writing the retreat, because she says 90% of these inmates were abused seriously in childhood. And I hadn't realized that, but I since know it as a fact. I've seen the statistics and so forth. So I did begin to deal with the issue of abuse in my retreat, and it was very successful, and a lot of people were touched through it. I can also say there was a lot of spiritual warfare when I gave it. Here I'd been working in this prison for at least 2 years, and guards were not letting me come in, or they were trying to block my entry to the prison. Then they had body searches, you know, when the men would just come out of a talk and a prayer session. They were doing strip searches and everything, and it was just a nasty attack. But it said to me, it's because you're doing what God wants. You know, it's a backhanded confirmation. But that led to something else. See, this was a high-security men's prison, and Chaplain Paul Gail said to me, you know, I'm not comfortable counseling with men who are here for serious crimes, a lot of them violent crimes, by myself. Would you be my partner in team counseling? And so that's what we started to do, and I would go in on a day off very often to meet with her and meet with inmates. But that was the beginning of the Lord setting me up for yet another project, which took me far beyond prison ministry, but it started there. And it was one of the most dramatic things I'd ever seen. I went in one day, it was a day off. She called me to come in, and she hadn't told me about the man or his history. And she called down to his cell block to see if he'd come up, or, you know, to have him sent up to the chapel. But it was delayed, and we were just making small talk, and eventually the man came up, but I still didn't know the history, and I wasn't even alarmed about it. He came into her office, and she tried to introduce us, and he just kind of grunted hello, and he wouldn't look at me. And I immediately realized this man has an issue with Catholics or with priests, or I'm not sure. Well, soon it came out that this man, who was in his 60s, had been molested by a priest when he was pre-adolescent in a Catholic school years ago. And that had led him to renounce his faith. He had even entered the occult for a while. But he had started going to the Protestant service. He had opened his heart to Christ and was starting to know some healing. So he eventually consented to have both of us pray with him. And so we prayed over him for maybe, 10 minutes. And he opened his eyes and he smiled and he looked at her and he says, I feel connected to you, Chaplain Paul. And then he looked at me and he says, I feel connected to you, Father Crew. He says, there are 700 people in this institution. I feel connected to them. And he says, there are people in this room that we can't see, and I feel connected to them. And he was talking about the great cloud of witnesses from the book of Hebrews. And he had a major, major breakthrough, major healing of deep sexual abuse issues from childhood. And this was around the year 2000. So then he said to us, now I can tell you what happened before I came up here. And we just said, what? What happened? He said, when the guard came to my cell with the pass to go to the chapel, I couldn't bring myself to pray with a Catholic priest. So I said to the guard, I'm not feeling well. Please tell the chaplain I'm not coming. And I went back into my cell and shut the door. Now, the prison was very new at that time. It was only 5 years old, and all the doors lock automatically. It's all electronic. When he shut the door of his cell, it swung open. So he reached out and slammed it shut, and it swung open again. Tried it again, and then the guards wondered what was going on. So the guard said, you pull it from the inside, I'll push it from the outside. It swung open again, and then he said, I think I need to go to the chapel. Later we prayed with him, and he had for further healing, and he had a vision of the priest who had molested him, and the priest was on his knees weeping in repentance. And that helped him a lot to move into the forgiveness that he needed to pray, you know, for that priest and so forth. And then Chaplain Paul moved on, and a new chaplain came in, but he was very Pentecostal background, and he's going to retire in about a week. I'm really going to miss him. I've taught him a lot about inner healing. He didn't have much background in that, and deliverance. I've since been able, you know, do that with him. But he asked me to meet with a man who had also been molested by a priest. That was about 2 years later, and that's when the clergy abuse issue was, you know, all over the place. By that time, Gail had retired. And so I met with this man, and he was willing to meet with me. He was about 40. Part of his story was he had twice tried to commit suicide. Once he jumped off the cliff in a park, but someone had dumped an old car over the cliff, and he landed on the roof of the car without a scratch. Second time he jumped off a building, but he landed on his feet and he sprained his ankle. So he got the idea God was not ready to take him yet. At first, you know, he would just talk to me about it, and I would just pray silently for him. Then finally, he was very depressed, and it was a lot of anger in him. So I said, why don't we just pray for the Lord to just remove the anger from your heart? So he was willing to do that. And I still am not laying hands or holding hands with him. That was word of knowledge. He had an experience of Christ at that moment. I was trying to explain to him inner healing, how it worked, how you open your heart, how you let Jesus come into the place of woundedness and so forth. But before I could even get this little mini course in inner healing, how to receive it, his eyes shut and this placid look comes over his face. He's in deep contemplative union with Christ somehow. And after about 20 minutes, he opened his eyes and he said, Jesus just spoke to me in my heart. And I said, what did he say? And he said, Tom, it's going to be okay. And that immediately said to me that what we needed to pray about even before the anger was the despair. In other words, he had lived with that pain for over 30 years, and it seemed like it was a permanent part of who he was. And so we needed to pray for him to be set free from the lie that told him that he would never be happy, he would always be sad, he'd always feel violated, he'd always feel cut off, and so forth. And so we went and we prayed for the despair to go. So the next time we prayed, we actually were able to hold hands. That day, I did see him before we went into that next session. He was going like this. I said, what was the business with your hands going like this? And he said, well, this hand wanted to punch you and the other hand was trying to stop it. Well, the next time we met, we were ready to hold hands and we prayed some more. Once again, his eyes shut, went in this placid look on his face, deeply peaceful, went on again for about 20 minutes. And then towards the end of the prayer, he opened his eyes and looked over his shoulder. Then he went back and prayed another 5 minutes. And then he came out of it and I said, Tom, do you have anything that you can tell me about what you experienced? And he said, oh yeah. He said, as soon as we held hands, he said, I could see Jesus standing behind me and he had his hand on my shoulder. And he says, that's why I opened my eyes to see if I could still see him. So he had this vision of Jesus praying when I was praying with him. Jesus was there pouring healing, you see, into him. Well, it was after that that I got a phone call from Gail, the former chaplain, and she said to me, "What's your take on all this publicity?" I think it was 2002. About all this bad publicity about the clergy and clergy abuse and all this. And I said, first I thought it was the press just after us again, but I said, I think it's the hand of God. I think it was the Lord allowing this to happen to force the church to deal with it. So she said, well, you wrote that first retreat for inmates and you dealt with the issue of sexual abuse and other kinds of abuse, even though it wasn't the whole theme of the retreat. Why don't you do a full-blown retreat to heal clergy victims of abuse? And I said to her, Gail, I said, you're retired, I'm not. You've had a lot more training in this area than I have. You got time to do what I don't. Why don't you do it? And we laughed and we hung up, you know. And a day later, I called her back and I said, Gail, are you hearing what I'm hearing? She says, you mean we're both supposed to work on it together? And I said, yes. And so over the phone and through the mail, in 4 months, we put together an inner healing retreat for abuse victims. At first, it was just for clergy sexual abuse victims. We soon realized that we needed to broaden it so any kind of sexual abuse victim could come. She came back to Connecticut. We gave it at the in a retreat house during the homily at the Mass. And we had 25 people that took it. Three of them were clergy abuse victims. All three of them had major breakthroughs, but almost everyone there, it was like a phenomenal experience. Even though we went in frightened and uptight, this whole thing, it was a very small retreat house, so everybody's sitting together, you know, really close, which seems to be the opposite of what abuse victims would need. But God made it work anyway. You know, we had all kinds of wonderful testimonies. Then we gave it at the federal prison with all the women. We had 100 women take it. It was phenomenal, you see. So the Lord broadened my vision of what we were able to do and what we were called to do. I want to just share a few things about what I've seen lately. As a result of all that, I realized I have to stay in prison ministry till enough priests are willing to do prison ministry and who are willing to learn about healing and deliverance can come in, because that's what's most sorely needed. If 90% of them were emotionally, physically, or sexually abused as children, then we need to know about that. We need to know how to minister to that. And that's why, even though I've never been assigned to prison, I'm a chaplain at two of them. I spend a lot of time at them and whenever I'm not in my parish, but I see wonderful, wonderful things. And it isn't always just what I take an initiative to do. It's you see things where the Lord sets it up in advance, you know. A year from last November, we have a new setup in the prison where on Thursday afternoons, as a Catholic deacon comes in and leads a Bible study, and he's new there, relatively new. So I say to the men on Sunday nights when I'm celebrating Mass, please try to come to Bible study. It's there for you. It's available. It's Thursday afternoons. It's an hour. You can come up and learn more about the faith, etc. And also I said, I'm here for counseling and healing prayer at that same time. So if you want to meet with me, come to the Bible study. Just tell me you want to come in and I'll meet with you in the office. I can minister to you and so forth. So one day I was ministered to a bunch of guys and there was a new man that was at the Bible study that had never been to Mass before. So he saw all these men coming out of the office. So when I was done and there was still time, he walked in. He said, you got time to talk to me? I said, sure. And he said, what would you like to talk about? He said, I know that God exists. And I said, oh, how do you know that? And he said, because a couple of weeks ago I tried to commit suicide and it didn't work. And then he said to me, I wasn't planning to do it, but I was feeling very depressed. And all of a sudden I found myself just setting it all up to happen. He said, can you explain that to me? And I said to him back, I know that children, when they go through seriously painful situations, especially where they've been mistreated by adults they had learned to trust, if that goes on and they're being mistreated, the evil one slips in and says something like this to them, make yourself a promise that if the pain doesn't go away and it gets any worse, you'll put an end to the pain by putting an end to your life. I said, does that ring any bells? Did you suffer any mistreatment as a child? And he said, yes. He said, my mother, one day she threw me down the stairs. I broke 3 ribs and the state had to step in and take me out of that house. So I said, okay. I explained about healing prayer. I said, you're going to let Jesus into the place where she abused you. There's a lot of sadness buried down there. You give Jesus permission to remove the sadness. There's a lot of anger down there. You're going to give Jesus permission to remove the anger. Anything in fear, because what was the next bad thing she's going to say or do to me? To give Jesus permission to remove the fear. Also, the decision that you made, promise you made to yourself as a little boy, if the pain gets much worse, I'm going to check it out. Because see, the evil one was still there, and he took over a few weeks ago because you were probably having a bad day and you felt so bad being confined and so forth. And so you're going to get rid of that. You're going to give Jesus permission to remove the death wish. He said, yeah. Okay, let's pray. So I pray over him for 5 minutes because that's all the time I had, you know. Finish praying over him, and his response is the word, wow. Except he's not saying it hushed tone. He's shouting. Wow! He shouted 4 times. Wow! And I'm thinking, this is going to disturb the Bible. Then I said, no, let him do it. Let him do it, you know. I was back only 2 days later, which was very unusual because they were having an Emmaus retreat there. And I was there for confessions. His name's Jason. Jason walks in and shuts the door and says, how do we get baptized? And they said, well, Jason, what's your religious background? He said, well, the family was Catholic, but I was never baptized or raised in the faith. And so I said to him, Jason, because he was due to be released in a month's time, I said, Jason, I'm going to give you a crash course in the Catholic faith. I got something for you to read. We'll meet between now and early January. And if you believe you want to be baptized, I will baptize you before you leave. And so right around Christmas time, a year ago, I baptized Jason and confirmed him, and he made his first communion. The neat thing just before he left was he came to me and he said, the social workers here, the guards, they're all saying to me, what's happened to you? You're so different. And he said, I got healing prayer from Father Crew, and then I got baptized. It was even better. So he's giving witness, you know, right within the prison, you see, to what the Lord had done, you see. I'm just going to stop here because I did want you to know that anytime I'm going through this, feel free to ask questions or make responses. If there's any, yes. I want to make sure that, you mean in the presence of such a priest or priest?
I mean for his sake.
Oh, for his sake.
To relieve him of this terrible obsession that he has.
Okay, no. What I have done, when I know, especially when I know that a certain priest that I've known him personally from ministry, you know, that when he's come under accusation and then laicization and so forth, I've prayed for their healing. You know, I prayed personally for them. I prayed for, because almost all, I mean, I've worked with a lot of abusers in prison, you know. I haven't met one that wasn't abused themselves as a child, you see. And so because of that, it's given me a compassion, even though I hate what they've done and I've seen the damage of what they've done, I know that the odds are very high that they themselves were abused. And so I've been able to do my own personal private prayer for them. And I really saw that not that long ago, I was meeting with a man, devout Catholic man, who started to experience sexual attraction towards his son, who was 10 years old. And he came to see me and talk to me about it. And the good news is that I was able to help him share the fact that when he was 10 years old, he was sexually abused by 2 relatives, you see, and it had never been brought to healing. But he felt so shamed and humiliated by even having these desires because he's happily married. I was able to help him see that, first of all, it was the abuse that implanted something toxic inside of him, and that we needed to pray for the cleansing of his sexuality because of the abuse. We need to do inner healing over the abuse that had come into his life as a 10-year-old. When we had done enough of that, he didn't need to come back, you see.
Is our hierarchy aware that you have a ministry that might be helpful to these men?
Okay. This is where I need healing. And need to I pray for it in the sense that I have tried so hard to get hierarchical support for this, and more than that, it's publicity, you see. And I've been foiled up till now. I know that God still wants it to happen. Previous bishop, you know, I sent him, as soon as the retreat was written, I sent him a copy of it, because he was on the big committee that came up with the new guidelines for bishops and clergy throughout the country. You know, a nice, like, two-sentence letter, thank you for what you're doing, keep up the good work, period. But no, I mean, people who knew about this retreat were really pleased about it. They went to our bishop and asked that he would do an article in our diocesan newspaper. It all got stopped. I was approached by a Catholic psychologist friend who has actually attended the retreat. He's charismatic in background. He is totally sold on the retreat, and his specialty is sexual abuse. When Pope Benedict was flying back from the beatification of Cardinal Newman, he was talking to reporters on the plane, and one of the questions were about the abuse issues and other things. The Pope ended the discussion with a question, and the question was, what can the church do to bring more healing to victims? So this psychologist came to me and said, you've got to look at what Pope Benedict said. Why don't you send him a copy of Retreat? And I said, yeah, stick it in the mail. What am I going to do? And then it hit me that 3 years ago, we had our National Charismatic Conference in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and one of the speakers was Father Cantalamessa, the Pope's preacher. So the thought came in my mind, see if you can get through to Father Cantalamessa. So they had a special session the day before the gathering for just priests and deacons with Cantalamessa. So I said, this is it. So I went. I went to the day early and went to the conference. And they announced Father Cantalamessa was delayed in the Netherlands because it was a problem with his visa. So that night, I went to a talk that Peter Herbeck had gave. You probably have heard of Peter. And it was a great talk on faith. And faith is looking at impossible odds and surmounting those odds. And he quoted John Wimber, how do you spell faith? And it was R-A-S-K. That was John Wimber's. And so I said to the Lord before I went to bed, if you're really in this, I want a clear path to Father Cantalamessa. Got up the next morning, went down to the restaurant for breakfast. Just walking into the restaurant, who's walking out of the restaurant by himself? Father Cantalamessa. I had emailed Father Cantalamessa 2 weeks earlier, telling him who I was and what I wanted to share with him. So I said, Father Cantalamessa, did you get my email? Yes, I did. Would you be willing to take a look at the retreat? Yes, I will, if I have time. I said, when are you speaking today? He says, 10 o'clock, because we didn't have a schedule, because it all got changed. I said, okay, after your talk, I'm going to hand you a copy of the retreat. I handed him a copy of the retreat. And that was that. And 3 days later, I got an email from him saying, I've read the retreat carefully. I'm very impressed by it, but I've had no experience with this kind of ministry. He said, what do you want me to do? And I said, see if you can pray about giving a copy of it to Pope Benedict. And nothing ever came of it. Then this psychologist met a cardinal from the Vatican. The same psychologist a year later gave another copy to him. He said he would give it to Benedict. This was just before Benedict retired. Still never heard anything. So that's where it stays. I've been praying hard about, I mean, no one seems to me would be more open to this than Pope Francis, see? Especially when he gave that incredible image of the church. What would you like the church to become? And he said, I'd like to see it become like a field hospital at the edge of a battlefield. And you don't ask the people or the patients who are brought in about their blood sugar or their cholesterol. You tend to their wounds. So he's talking about inner healing, you see? He's talking about the church becoming a hospital of inner healing, among other things. So that gives me a lot of hope. But here's my struggle right now. The Lord if you hear something different, tell me. But I have prayed about this. And what I feel like the Lord says, I'm working there behind the scenes and you will get a positive thing from Rome. It isn't dead. That's what I'm hearing him say. Keep praying, Lord, if this is a spirit of deception, set me free from it. But that's, I feel like the Lord is saying, I want you to trust me that I'm going to break through with this.
Take it up in my prayers.
Good. Yes. I'd appreciate that a lot.
Yeah. Because we all despise people who abuse children, but nobody thinks about the one doing the abuse.
Right.
And how really pitiful.
Yeah, it is pitiful. It's pitiful. Yeah. Yes.
Prisons,
yeah.
Who are charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
Some years back, I got a call from one of them and said, would you come in and do a life in the spirit in the prison?
Mm-hmm.
And we did it. It was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. First one in New York State. Where can I get a copy of that? Because I believe I can give it to them, and we can do this in the prisons too, in Rochester.
You're talking about my healing in the prison retreat?
Can we get...
Oh, yes, you can. And I will send it to you free of charge. Okay.
Yeah,
more than one.
There's
okay. More than one if you need them. Tony mentioned that Father Dick talked to the bishop about Burning Bush Ministries and the inner healing and deliverance work you do. And the bishop suggested that he go to the seminary and do presentations to the seminarians about this. But since Father did that, met with the rector first, nothing's been happening. And I think that's a huge, another example of things in the church, people in authority who are very skeptical about not just charismatic renewal, but the validity and power of the charisms today for today's church. I mean, Vatican II, it's official doctrine of the Catholic Church. Since in the decree on the church and the decree on the laity, it's in both of them that the New Testament gifts of the Holy Spirit are just as needed in today's church as they were in the first century, is basically to summarize what the... And so it's official doctrine of the church, and yet it's still ignored in so many places in the world. Across the board, no. But the U.S. is particularly difficult, and so we're still praying and looking for that breakthrough. I want to share one other thing along that line. Beginning of this new year, I felt a push. I have an Episcopal priest friend, Father Nigel Mumford. He used to be situated in the Albany area for a while. He is a former Royal Marine and suffered a lot from post-traumatic stress out of his experiences in Northern Ireland. In fact, I'll just share with you how he came together with this program that he's put together, because it's an inner healing retreat for veterans who suffer from post-traumatic stress. About 8 years ago, he was at a conference of the Association of Christian Therapists, which I also belong to, and we both were invited as speakers at this particular conference. They didn't know that we had known each other because he was originally from Connecticut before he moved from England. And we had done ministry together. In fact, I had kind of mentored him in deliverance ministry. Anyway, we were both at the conference and we were having breakfast together one day. And he shared with me his vision to put together an inner healing retreat for veterans who are coming back emotionally wounded and spiritually wounded. And I said to him at that moment, I said, for a soldier to be under fire in danger of death, witnessing death around him and the threat of death, that has to be so wounding. And I said, just to stay alert, you've got to focus all your attention on staying alive. And what are you going to do with these negative emotions? You're going to bury them. And then they're still down there after the crisis is over. As I said that to him, his eyes glazed over and he was gone for a while. And he came back and he had a post-traumatic flashback to Northern Ireland, to an event where he and his buddy were under sniper fire and his buddy got wounded and he was sheltered enough where he wasn't wounded and they radioed for help and the fire stopped, the attack stopped. He was still in danger, got out of shelter, so he was waiting for help to come and some teenagers from Northern Ireland came out and mocked the soldier who was bleeding and possibly dying. And they jumped up and down in a pool of blood next to this poor soldier. And Father Nigel was so tempted at that time to pull the trigger on them. He was so angry, but he never did. Well, this is the flashback that he had, but he said it was different. He said he watched Jesus walk into the scene, and Jesus spoke to the kids and said, I died for that man. That's my blood you're dancing in. Stop. And then he walked over to Father Nigel and he said, I died for those children too. Stop. And then he came out of it, and we talked about, you know, what he experienced. So he came up with this full retreat, and they've been giving it a number of places, and wonderful breakthroughs have happened. And I've actually participated twice helping him, you know, do healing prayer in some of these retreats and seen wonderful breakthroughs. Well, I found out in January that in Connecticut, they've just put together a special unit for inmates who are former veterans who are in prison because of post-traumatic stress and acting out in one way or another. So we have a new commissioner, and the new commissioner is the former warden in the prison where I've been working for so many years, and I know him personally. So I contacted him to let him know that this retreat exists. I sent him a copy of the retreat on DVD, and they're going to have a meeting next month to decide whether they're going to put it in effect. So we have a chance of bringing an inner healing retreat for veterans into the state prison in Connecticut. But I felt like the Lord gave me that push. I knew the warden, now commissioner, and because I knew Father Nigel so well, and I've helped him, and I know how powerful the retreat is to bring inner healing on that dimension, you see, into the prison. So that's a real possibility. Praying hard for that, if you wouldn't keep that in prayer too.
Okay, you do ministry. I got my hat on.
Yeah.
That's cold.
Yeah.
Ball.
Yeah.
For prison, but we deal with people who are like in a prison themselves.
Sure.
Hurts.
Yeah.
Do you have any like book you recommend or something that might be good for us in dealing with this?
Okay, well.
Or is that the free thing you have helpful to us too?
Yeah. Let me share two things back to back here. First thing is, I went through a period in the late 70s where I underwent some persecution because I was charismatic and I had a bishop that was not in favor. And so I was on a leave of absence and I had time in my hands. But I had been in the renewal since early 70s and the Lord had taught me so much about inner healing. And so I was wanted to put together a booklet on inner healing that it would take 6 months. I ended up writing a book that took me 6 years. When I was through with the book, and there's a lot of good stuff in the book, I see it much more simply and clearly now than when I wrote the book. But one day, I got this question that popped into my mind. And the question was, if you're going to summarize your book, it's a 300-page book, in one sentence, how would you do that? Boom. And then the answer came. Give Jesus unconditional permission to enter your woundedness. I mean, I know that was an inspired question and answer. Fast forward to a couple of years ago when I gave the abuse retreat out in the Seattle area. The renewal asked me to do it. There was a wonderful breakthrough. A lot of people had breakthroughs, but a young man in his 20s, before we even started, came up to me and he said, "You're not going to make us cry, are you?" And I said, "I'm going to try to make you laugh," I said. At the tail end of the retreat, the folks who had organized the retreat originally were going to have healing teams because about 40 people took the retreat, but they couldn't get the healing teams together. So basically what I had to say at the end of the last talk was, "I want you to pray with each other." They're all people looking for healing themselves, but I want you to pray for each other. I'll come around and pray for all of you, you know, but you got to start doing it for each other. And they signaled to me almost right away, one of the tables, because this young man was there and he was shaking and he just couldn't seem to break through. So I sat down next to him and I said, he said, I can't do this. And I said, "You don't have to do anything, just sit there, I'm gonna pray for you." He got delivered, had an amazing breakthrough. He wasn't Catholic, he had actually taken RCIA 2 years in a row. But because of the clergy abuse situation, he just was too frightened because he had been so abused as a child, too frightened to make himself available to potential new clergy abusers. But I sent him a copy of the entire retreat because this was condensed. And he had some powerful experiences as he was doing that. And he broke through completely. And a year later, he was baptized. And 6 months later, he was brought into the church and so forth. This was a November retreat. So Easter time, he came into the church. It's changed his life. He wants to become a Catholic deacon now. And he's got his own business, and amazing things have happened to him. But coming back from that retreat, I had another saint experience. I started out studying with the Franciscans, and I wanted to be a Franciscan priest. But there were some things that I didn't like, not about the order, but about the way they were, in my view, were mistreating some of the potential priests of the future. They were looking for college professors, but they were advertising for missionaries. And so if you didn't have a high IQ and you weren't getting all A's, they just said you were never called to be a Franciscan. And I just found that unjust and untrue and unfair. And so I spoke out against it, so they booted me out, you see. But I was picked up by our diocese. And so anyway, I'm driving back. I've been flying back all day from Seattle. I'm only 5 minutes from the parish. I'm at a red light, and I have this awareness Francis of Assisi is praying for me. And Francis is saying, you've been very wounded by my brothers, and you need to bring it to Jesus. And I still look upon you as my brother. And it was just amazing, you know. And over the next 3 days, I went back, and my first reaction was, I never think about that stuff anymore. I never think about that. I never go back there. But in the next 3 days, I remembered the most painful moments. I brought it all to prayer, asked the Lord to set me free, and I was. And so 2 or 3 days later, I felt for the first time, at the age of 65 or so, or 63, I felt like I used to feel at 23. I got back something I'd lost. There was a joyfulness about life. There was a hopefulness about life that I had closed down after that, you know? So anyway, then I decided, I got to go back and say, Lord, I prayed so hard when all that was going on. Why didn't I get healed then? And he showed me something very simple. He said, basically, the way you were praying was, Lord, I need your help to get myself past this situation. I have to heal me, but I can't do it all by myself. You need to help me. He says, you had it backwards. You were allowing me to be the nurse, and you were your own doctor. We all do that, you see? And so I said, wow. So basically, and how do we try to heal ourselves when we don't know that Christ is the healer? It isn't just that we're young. You see, we all come from a tradition that lost touch with its roots. We come from a tradition where healing became reduced to something, supernatural healing became reduced to something that happened, you know, at shrines like Lourdes, but don't expect it to happen in the here and now, in normal, ordinary places, see? And so no one taught you and me about inner wounds, about what I would call spiritual-emotional wounds, because it hits you on both levels and then moves on to the physical very often, see? No one taught us about that. So what are we to do when we're mistreated? What are we to do with the pain, you see? We try to heal ourselves. And how do we try to heal ourselves? Here, I put it, this is the way I see it now. We do two things. Push it down and then push ahead. Find a place to bury it and then refocus on life and get back to what you do. Don't let it get in the way. The heart to inner healing ministry is to tell people that we were never meant to heal ourselves, but we've all done it. We all are tempted to still do it. But that when we learn that Christ is the healer of inner wounds, wants to set us free from anything that would hold us back from being our true selves, that would hold us back from being the loving, compassionate, patient people that we are meant to be as witnesses to Christ, then it's a whole new way of approaching the wounds that come into our lives. I feel like right now, you know, what happens to me, if something upsetting happens where I feel slighted, mistreated, misunderstood, not treated fairly, when I feel the pain of that, I know that I got to bring it to prayer. You know, I know that. But because I know what I know now about inner healing, I feel like it's almost like it happens, you know, and oh. And then there's like a tap on the shoulder and it's like, do you want to give it to me now? And it's like, no, I want to be mad for a while. I want to at least have a picture of getting even, right? Even though I'm not going to do it, you see? What I'm saying is that when you get to know about inner healing and you're experiencing new woundedness in life, then the Lord is saying, come to me as quickly as possible. Come to me as quickly as possible with it. And for me right now, he's saying, give it to me right now. And then you won't even have to wait till tonight. See, that's what I'm trying to say. Okay. Yes.
It was almost like for a long time, the church was almost teaching us to be miserable. I mean, I grew up, my father was Jewish and had persecution and came here. And And they were all somber and serious, and we were supposed to suffer, so you weren't even supposed to pray for healing, in a sense. And the first time I saw real joy in the Holy Spirit was my grandmother's cousin became a Pentecostal, and she would come to the house, and this woman radiated joy. And it was the first time I associated with Christianity. So the church has got to change its mood, and they
right.
That's something it doesn't accept in charismatics, but we want to have joy.
I got a great little story along that line. There was a conference, you know, a big charismatic, international charismatic conference in Rome right around the year 2000. It was the 3 years leading up to the millennium, and I forget which year it was. I was there. I went to a talk, and they broke up into small groups according to what language group you were from. And so I was with an English-speaking group. There were people there from U.S., from Virgin Islands, you know, from any English-speaking country. And of course, Britain. So I was seated next to a lady from England, and she had her say. And she says, "Our priests in Ireland only believe in the Passion; they don't believe in the Resurrection." And I knew immediately what she meant. You see, that she wasn't saying that they didn't believe that Jesus came out of the tomb on Easter Sunday alive bodily. No, what she was saying is, if we have a problem and we go to the priest, he'll listen and he'll say, "Offer it up." See? Over and out, you see. You see that, and it's part of the truth, you see, that no suffering we go through is wasted. And John Paul put it very wonderfully and simply when he said, he's commenting on Colossians 1:16, and he's saying, what did Paul possibly mean when he said that we can make up in our own body what was missing in the suffering of Christ, you know, the Passion of Christ. What possibly could be missing from the Passion of Christ? And John Paul's answer was, nothing is missing from the Passion of Christ, but it's as if he left a little hole in the middle of it, inviting us to insert our sufferings in there, you see. And I think that's a beautiful answer. But, you see, at the same time, Jesus wanted his followers to know that if they had suffered something unfairly and unjustly, they could identify with their Lord who had already suffered something similar, and they could give it over to him, believing that he could use it. But at the same time, he wanted to set us free from it, that's the resurrection in the here and now. One of the big teachings that the Lord gave me personally on inner healing for me, but it was not just for me, it was my first encounter. I didn't know about spiritual warfare, really, too much about it. And I was a happy charismatic for about 4 years, you know. And God protected me from spiritual attacks, you know. But there was this 1 month where the spiritual attacks were coming in, and I didn't even know that I was getting attacked because the evil one was unhappy with the way I was doing things and what I was doing. I was starting to dawn on me that it had to be the evil one. But here I am, it was like Holy Week, and I have to get ready to preach about the joy of Christ's victory on Easter Sunday. And I'm feeling like, I think I'm gonna have to fake this because I feel so down, so drained, you know, and so beat up that it's not gonna be authentic, but I don't know what else to do. So I took it to prayer and I got led to open up to the story of the disciples on the road to Emmaus. So I read the story and I said, okay, I'm gonna just picture it in my own imagination. There's this Cleopas, unnamed sidekick, and Jesus. So I'll be the unnamed sidekick and just kind of be a part of that. And so that's really neat about this flashback, this anointed imagination thing. I can overhear the conversation, but they all have Yiddish accents. So Jesus walks up to Cleopas and his friend, and he says, "What you talking about?" And Cleopas says, "Are you the only one around here that doesn't know what happened in Jerusalem over the weekend?" And Jesus says, "Something happened in Jerusalem over the weekend?" And I started to laugh. You see, I started to laugh. But in this scenario, you see, Jesus is making light of his own passion. How could that possibly be? It could possibly be because he's totally healed of it. It isn't just that his body works again and it's got new properties and he walks through walls and stuff. It's that all that he felt about abandonment and rejection, all those wounds, being totally mistreated. That has all been healed. It isn't just his body's been healed. His spirit has been healed. His emotions have been totally restored. You see, it's totally victorious, you see. So Jesus was saying to me, start celebrating Easter now during Holy Week. Give me those wounds over that you've suffered over the past month. I don't want you to fake it for me on Easter, you see. I don't want you to fake it. I want to heal it. Let me into all the disappointments, all the discouragements, whatever it was that I went through in that month, you see. And he taught me something similar about spiritual warfare. I went through another, and this wasn't, it was maybe a couple of years ago. And I went through, it was tough, just a lot of stuff. You knew there's a lot of spiritual warfare going on, a lot of setbacks and stuff like that. So one night I sat down, before I went to bed, I said, Lord, you know, it's been a rough month. I said, I think I need healing over a bunch of things that happened over the last month. And before I could say anything else, the question comes. You know, when you get questions in prayer, very often it could be Jesus. You know, he says, what took you so long? And what that taught me was that if I have a bad day or something's been building up during the day, I've got to deal with it before I go to bed. You see, I've got to deal with it. Give it to Jesus then, you see. And I think that connects with that beautiful phrase from Jeremiah, your mercies are made new each morning. How can God's mercies be made new for us each morning the way they're meant to be if we're dragging the sadnesses of yesterday unnecessarily into the next morning?